Welcome to Island Crimes and Mysteries. And now, it's time to join your host, Newells, for another episode.
Hey guys, and welcome to another episode of Ireland Crimes and Mysteries. I want to thank you for joining me today, and if you're a returning listener, I want to say a big thank you for your continued support. If this is your first time listening to my podcast, welcome. It's great to have you on board. Right guys, do you want to immerse yourself in the captivating world of Ireland's most intriguing crimes and mysteries and carry a piece of this thrilling adventure wherever you go with our Ireland Crimes and Mysteries t-shirt collection? Every t-shirt isn't just a piece of clothing. It's a statement of your support for my podcast and a cool piece of kit as well. By snagging one of these tees, you will be doing more than just showing off your excellent taste in podcasts. You're becoming a vital part of the journey. Every shirt helps us keep the lights on and the equipment running, the mysteries unravelling and the stories coming, ensuring that our exploration into Ireland's most captivating crimes and mysteries continues. So what are you waiting for? Join our community of supporters, thinkers and mystery solvers today. Help me keep the stories coming, one episode and one t-shirt at a time. Head over to my store on tpublic.com. The link will be in the description below. Now, back to today's story.
It's been a very empty time without Deirdre in our lives. There's reminders every day since over the 25 years that she's not around. Whenever you look at photographs that have been taken over 25 years, there's that empty space. Deirdre's not there.
Our case today takes us to County Kildare, and more specifically to the town of Newbridge. Lying on the banks of the River Liffey, Newbridge sits just off the M7 motorway, some 50 kilometres outside Dublin City. With a population of over 24,000, it is home to the famous Newbridge Silverware, a must visit for all explorers of Ireland's ancient East. As well as all the beautiful products on sale there, you can visit the Museum of Style Icons at the Visitor Centre, where you can see fashion collections and personal artefacts from such icons as the Beatles, Marilyn Monroe, Audrey Hepburn, Princess Grace and Princess Diana, to name but a few. The nearby Curragh Racecourse is also a must visit if you have a passion for horse racing. With over 5,000 acres of Curragh Plains, it is one of Europe's oldest grasslands and home to the famous Irish Derby. Newbridge is known as a commuter town as many of its residents travel to Dublin for work. It is in Newbridge we find the Jacob family. Dad Michael, Mam Bernadette and daughters Deirdre and Kira. In July of 1998, Deirdre was home for the summer break from college. She was studying to be a primary school teacher at St Mary's College in Twickenham in London. Deirdre was born on October 14, 1979 and grew up in the family home just outside Newbridge in an area called Rosebery. Her mother worked in the health service at their offices in Naas and her father worked for Tagusk, an agricultural advisory board. Her sister Kira was still in secondary school in 1998, but was also on her summer holidays. Deirdre was described as a good person, who loved reading and writing and was a member of the church choir in her secondary school days, as well as volunteering at the local Sunday school. She also loved music and could play the guitar and piano, so it was no surprise that after completing her leaving certificate, she headed to England to study to be a teacher in 1997. Deirdre was home for the summer after finishing her first year in May. She'd been back for short periods during the college year to visit and also to do work placement at her old school. Her mother had helped her get a summer job within the health board, and she had a fun-filled summer planned, catching up with friends, having already spent a weekend in Kingscourt, County Cavan with some of her friends, and was even making plans for her boyfriend, whom she had met at college, to come visit that August. She looked forward to introducing him to her family and friends and sightseeing with him. All in all, Deirdre was in very high spirits and looked forward with positivity to the bright future that lay ahead for her after enjoying her summer at home. The morning of the 28th of July started off like any other morning. Deirdre was still in bed when her mother and father left for work. Her sister was staying with a friend, so Deirdre had the house to herself that morning. Her mother rang the house at around 12 to remind Deirdre that the deposit for her flat in London was due to be sent off that day. Deirdre told her mother she would walk into Newbridge and collect the deposit from the bank and go to the post office and post it, telling her mother she would see her back at the house around 6 when her mother returned from work. Deirdre tidied up after the breakfast and did a few more house chores before leaving the house after midday to start the 25-minute walk into Newbridge. She first visited her grandmother Bridget, who used to run a sweet shop in the town. Now in her 90s, Deirdre loved spending time with her grandmother any chance she got, as they were both very close. After leaving her grandmother, she met up with some friends for a chat. She then made her way up to the main street to the AIB bank to deposit money into her account to be able to organise the bank draft for £180. She was recorded on CCTV entering the bank for the first time and leaving at 12:58 p.m. She then returned to her grandmother's shop for a second visit just after 1. On leaving her grandmother, she went back to the bank and picked up the bank draft. CCTV picked Deirdre up leaving the bank at 2:20 p.m. and heading to the post office to post it, along with some letters she had written. En route, she had a brief exchange with a friend and then continued on her way. Again, CCTV picked her up in the post office at 2:26 p.m. She meets another old friend in the queue at the post office and she has a chat with them. Once her business is done, she left the post office and CCTV picked her up passing the permanent TSB in Newbridge at 2:35 p.m. By now, Deirdre had completed all her errands and was starting the 25-minute walk home. She should have been safely back at her house by at least 3:05 if she had walked there with no interruption. 8 witnesses have come forward to say they saw Deirdre in that time frame. Out of the 8 witnesses, 6 of them knew Deirdre. The other 2 recognised her from Garda appeals and they came forward because of that. As she walked down the Bardstown Road, she exchanged pleasantries with a few people she knew. She is now about 10 minutes from her house. The route she took leaving the town to get to her home cannot be 100% verified, as there are a couple of different routes she could have taken, side streets, etc. But ultimately, whatever route she took, she was spotted by a neighbour who was working on the roof at the time, walking on the Bardstown Road. He called out to her as she passed by and she waved back at him. She's now approximately 2 minutes from her home. Another person believes they passed her in their car as Deirdre approached the entrance to her house. Deirdre was wearing that day a navy Nike t-shirt, blue jeans, she had navy Nike runners on, and she had on her person a mustard-coloured Levi purse and a black shoulder bag with a yellow edging on it with the cat logo. This stood out to the passerby because of the distinctive bag she was wearing. On her return from work after 6 p.m. that evening, Deirdre's mother Bernadette is surprised to find the house is still locked up and empty. Deirdre should have been back from the town hours ago. Everything in the house is exactly as it would have been when Deirdre left. So it was obvious to her mother she had not been back to the house at all. This worried her, so she started contacting Deirdre's friends to see if any of them had seen her. Everybody she rang had either not seen Deirdre at all that day or said the last time they had seen her was that afternoon between 2 and 3 p.m. In the meantime, Deirdre's dad, Michael, had returned home from work and on hearing that Deirdre could not be located, makes a few calls of his own. When he had no luck either in locating his daughter, they initially rang the Garda station. But then they made the decision to go in person to the Newbridge Garda station and report Deirdre missing. They did not want to waste any time. The Gardaí immediately take the Jacobs' concerns for their daughter's welfare seriously, and a search of the local area commences with haste by 11 p.m. that evening. By the following day, Wednesday the 29th of July, the search had ramped up around the local area. but there was no trace of Deirdre. On Friday the 31st of July, a nationwide media appeal is made. It appeared from the information Gardaí had gathered that Deirdre had disappeared from her front entrance. The national and local broadcasters ran the story as their main headline, and all the national newspapers covered the disappearance. The fact that Deirdre had disappeared so close to her home in broad daylight beside a busy road was bizarre, to say the least. Deirdre came from a stable family, was a happy and bright young lady with her life ahead of her. She was doing the course she loved and looking forward to a career in teaching, a job she always wanted to do. Rumours were rife in the area that a white van was in the area the day Deirdre went missing, but after investigation, it was ruled out. A sighting of a young girl matching Deirdre's description going into a cafe in Tara Street, Dublin, was also investigated, but again came to nothing. On the 2nd of August, Gardaí made a fresh appeal for any witnesses, describing Deirdre as being 5'2" tall and of slim build with dark hair and grey-green eyes. They then carried out a reconstruction of her last known movements on the 5th of August. One of her school friends stood in as Deirdre for the reconstruction. Lots of reports of supposed sightings of Deirdre were received, and Gardaí had to look into them all. One in particular stood out as one with potential. This one, the Gardaí were taking really seriously. A man with a Northern Irish accent had made an anonymous call to the Shannon Side Northern Sound radio station a total of 10 times. As well as that, he wrote a 4-page letter to Deirdre's parents. Between all the correspondence, he said that he was a truck driver and he had been in the Newbridge area that day Deirdre disappeared. He said he was in the area of Clane, County Kildare, when he claimed he had picked up Deirdre hitchhiking. He said that she had said she wanted to go to Carrickmacross in County Monaghan. He agreed to take her as this was the route he was taking. He stated after making a brief stop in Ardrey, he drove her to Carrickmacross. Why this information was significant was that, unknown to the general public, Deirdre had spent the previous weekend in County Cavan with her friends. Had she met someone there? The Gardaí canvassed the area and her family spent a significant amount of time in Cavan and Monaghan handing out missing posters. The Gardaí made repeated calls publicly for the man to come forward so they could talk to him and get as much information as possible from him, but to no avail. So the decision was made to release a small snippet of one of the recorded conversations they had with him to the public, in the hope that someone would recognise his voice, which they did on the 9th of January 1999. There was a massive response to it and several people called naming the same person who lived in a small village just over the border in County Fermanagh. This seemed to be their guy, as they had already established that some of the calls had been made from a phone box in that very village. But there was a problem. The Gardaí had no jurisdiction over this area as it was in Northern Ireland. So a request was put forward to the RUC, the Royal Ulster Constabulary, for them to interview the man. Gardaí were allowed to be present and ask questions if the man in question consented to this. Not the ideal scenario. But then, a stroke of luck. One of the RUC officers had observed that the man made a trip to Monaghan Town in the Republic once a week on a shopping trip. So a plan was put in place to arrest him as soon as he crossed the border, which the Gardaí duly did on the 21st of January. The man was shocked by this turn of events and was taken to Monaghan Garda Station to be interviewed about the abduction of Deirdre. Unfortunately for Gardaí, the man very quickly admitted to making the whole thing up and provided a solid alibi for the day in question. After a forensic search of his home was carried out, Gardaí were satisfied that he had nothing to do with Deirdre's disappearance and was only guilty of wasting Garda's time and resources. Any information he provided was already in the public domain. He told Gardaí that he had lost his own daughter in a road traffic accident, and he only wanted to give hope to the Jacob family that Deirdre was still out there. To say Deirdre's family's hopes were dashed was an understatement. This had been the first really credible lead, and it had led nowhere. The investigation continued, and so did the searches, but to no avail. The media interest had gained massive traction over the months since Deirdre vanished, especially considering Deirdre had disappeared only 50 kilometres from where Jojo Dullard had made that final call from the phone box in Moon before she disappeared without a trace only 2 years previously. The family were convinced Deirdre was abducted near her house by someone, and the Gardaí were also of the opinion that Deirdre had been abducted by a predator who was looking for an opportunity to take someone, and Deirdre afforded him this opportunity simply by being alone, walking home, something she had every right to be doing. But who would be so bold as to even attempt an abduction in the middle of the day on a bright, warm, sunny day? A renewed appeal for information, which had taken place in December of 1998 on RTE's Crimeline, yielded no new information. Over the years, lots of false leads were followed up by the Gardaí. Unfortunately, this seems to be a common thing in all the missing persons cases. Why people feel the need to give false information, I will never understand. Then, around 18 months after Deirdre had disappeared, a serious sexual assault took place on a woman some 50 kilometres from where Deirdre had disappeared. Again, it felt organised and predatory, and the man in question, who the media gave the moniker the Beast of Baltinglass, soon became a person of interest in the disappearance of Deirdre. He would be found guilty in 2001 of the abduction, sexual assault and attempted murder of this young woman and served out his sentence in Arbor Hill Prison. One of the favourite pastimes in the prison for the inmates was to make their own home brew, a concoction that emulated real-world vodka. And this, of course, led to many drink-fuelled chats amongst the inmates. Then in early 2011, detectives on Deirdre's case were made aware of a specific conversation that was alleged to have taken place between the Beast of Baltinglass and a fellow inmate, allegedly Deirdre's abduction and murder being the overriding topic of conversation. The conversation in question had never been denied or otherwise by the Beast of Baltinglass, and according to detectives working on the case, the informant would not be the most reliable. But detectives do feel there may have been some truth to his story, as he had nothing to gain from telling it, only to make his life as a rat in prison more difficult for himself. He went on to say that the drink-fueled conversation turned into a bragging conversation, bragging about crimes they had committed but never been caught for. And the inmate said that it was then that the Beast said that he had been involved in the abduction of a girl in Newbridge years before. The inmate told detectives that the Beast allegedly said that he had been driving around looking for an easy target to abduct in his car. He had children's toys strewn around the car to reassure any girl he stopped to speak to that he was not a threat. He also had a children's car seat in the car and a road map on the passenger seat. He told the inmate that as he stopped up beside the girl in question, he had the map in his hand, giving the impression he was lost and looking for directions. He also had the passenger window fully rolled down. He then told the inmate that when he pulled up beside the girl in Newbridge and asked her for directions, she leaned in to see where he was pointing. He then took the opportunity and grabbed her by the hair and aggressively pulled her into the car and forced the terrified young lady into the footwell of the car. He said he quickly drove off as she continued to fight for her freedom. It was then he allegedly took the hammer and hit her over the head, and she was knocked unconscious. He then drove to a secluded spot several miles from Newbridge, where he proceeded to assault the unconscious girl before killing her and hiding her remains. Detectives did wonder why the inmate was giving up this information so easily. He told them he was a father himself, and because he was in prison, he could not protect his own daughter. So he was willing to take whatever was coming to him in prison for ratting, if it meant he saved another girl's life. After gathering the signed statement from the inmate, Several searches were conducted in areas that were mentioned as possible areas he could have concealed the body. As well as all the searches taking place, a list of all potential cars that the beast owned over the years was compiled, and they were traced and taken in for forensic analysis. One of the cars was actually found in a scrapyard in the west of Ireland and was due to be crushed the very next day. It was a long shot, as a lot of these cars were owned by him years before and had been sold on, so any evidence could well be gone. And unfortunately, nothing of note was found on examination. This jailhouse statement did delicately ring true for the detectives, as there were some dubious links between Deirdre's abduction and the Beast of Baltinglass, which had been established as the investigation had proceeded. The first being that he had, at the time of Deirdre's disappearance, worked for a building firm from the Wicklow area that would regularly do work in Newbridge and the surrounding area. Witnesses had actually come forward to Gardaí stating that he had been doing renovation work on their house the very day that Deirdre had vanished. Then there is CCTV showing Deirdre setting out on her walk home from Newbridge as workmen are visible bringing building supplies into a local pub. She actually stops up at one point to leave the men bring the supplies into the pub. But according to Gardaí, all these men had been traced and none of them were suspects. Another link between Deirdre and the Beast came after Deirdre's beloved grandmother passed away and the family were clearing out her home and the shop. Amongst her possessions was a leaflet advertising carpentry work, and the name associated with the leaflet was none other than the Beast's. It could never be established how Deirdre's grandmother came into possession of the leaflet, but he had been seen on several occasions handing them out while canvassing for work. Whether he encountered Deirdre if he called to the shop could not be established either. Despite not being able to pin anything concrete on him, he remains one of the main suspects in Deirdre's abduction. In 2008, on the 10th anniversary of Deirdre's disappearance, a reward was set up of €100,000 for any information leading to the solving of Deirdre's case. Every year, the Jacob family made an appeal for information on the anniversary of her disappearance. Her mother saying in 2013 that they were no wiser now than they were the day she went missing. Her father adding that every time they drive out their gate, it crosses their minds. Then in August 2018, the case was upgraded by Gardaí to murder following a review by the Cold Case Unit. This was hard for the family to hear. Her father saying in an interview after the upgrade to murder was announced, "When you hear the word murder, it's a shock and a heart wrencher." He said when they heard that word for the first time, it literally stunned them. Her mother adding, "No one wants to hear that your child has been murdered. It's very difficult to hear it." Her father commended the Gardaí on their work, stating that they were always kept up to date with all the information regarding the investigation down through the years, saying they were very grateful for that. He described Deirdre as being a very happy-go-lucky girl with a great circle of friends, always keeping up close contact with them. Her mother spoke about her interests, saying she loved playing the piano and guitar. She loved reading, socialising with her friends, and she said she loved writing letters, stating that the evening before Deirdre went missing, they had gone into her room to say goodnight, and she was writing a letter to some of her friends, telling them about her weekend in King's Court with another group of friends the weekend previous. She also added that Deirdre didn't have a mobile phone, as it was only the very early days of this new technology. Of course, this also meant, unlike in today's world where you can pinpoint locations using mobile phone data, this technology was not available in any way to aid the search for Deirdre. Over the years, the Cold Case team has been actively pursuing leads. And as I said, several areas in Kildare and Wicklow have been searched regarding Deirdre and other missing women from that time period. In more recent times, October 2021 to be precise, a search was commenced in a wooded area near Taggartstown, County Kildare, some 15 kilometres from Newbridge and quite near Moon, where Jojo Dullard disappeared from the phone booth in November 1995. The search commenced after a tip-off from a member of the public who said they had witnessed suspicious activity in the area. Seemingly, the witness saw a car reverse into this area on the very evening Deirdre had gone missing. An extensive search of the area was carried out, despite having been previously searched in the past. No new evidence was unearthed, and after 3 weeks, it was called off. The site was targeted to be searched again after the cold case review team revisited the original statement made by the witness. A criminal file had been sent to the DPP, the Director of Public Prosecutions, after a review of evidence gathered in the case with regards to convicted rapist Larry Murphy, including CCTV footage of a man who Gardaí thought could have been Larry Murphy standing outside the post office in Newbridge around the time Deirdre would have been there. The footage was sent off to be forensically enhanced, and people would have known him at the time were shown the footage. A criminal file had been sent to the DPP, the Director of Public Prosecutions, after a review of the evidence gathered in the case with regards to convicted rapist Larry Murphy, including CCTV footage of a man who Gardaí thought could have been Larry Murphy standing outside the post office in Newbridge around the time Deirdre would have been there. The footage was sent off to be forensically enhanced, and people who would have known him at the time were shown the footage. The results were conflicting for Gardaí, with only one person making a positive ID that it was Murphy. Others were not so sure. But the file was returned from the DPP in 2022 with the direction no prosecution, after which the Gardaí said the case remains an active case, and again they appealed for witnesses to come forward. In February 2024, Deirdre's parents met with the Minister for Justice, Helen McEntee, along with other families of missing persons. The minister sat with the families and heard first-hand accounts of their lived experiences since their loved ones went missing. They discussed a number of reforms that are in the works to give the best chance of finding those that are missing, and also making sure the families' concerns are heard. One such change is the facility for DNA testing provided at a specialised facility where family members can submit DNA to help with identification. Deirdre's father, Michael, spoke calling for changes to the legislation where human remains have to be reinterred within 48 hours of exhumation. He said this time frame does not allow scientists the time to use advanced technologies such as 3D scanning of skulls for identification purposes. Minister McEntee did agree that this legislation was outdated and needed to be updated to come in line with modern forensic technology. She agreed to meet with the families again in 4 months to discuss progress on everything they had discussed. In concluding our examination of the disappearance of Deirdre Jacob, we are reminded of the profound impact that her disappearance has had on her family, friends and her community. For over 2 decades, Deirdre's family have lived with the torment of unanswered questions, their lives forever altered by that fateful day. Despite the passage of time, the resolve to find Deirdre has not waned. Their pursuit for closure and for justice is as determined as ever.
The search for Deirdre has taken over pretty much, because we're so anxious to try and find out, first of all, what happened to Deirdre. And also, where is she? So from that end, it's part of our everyday life.
I would say that it's a long 25 years, and we would appeal to anybody that at the time, 25 years ago, did you hear anything? Did you hear anything in the meantime or overhear anybody speaking? Is there anything at all that could help us with our search for Deirdre?
The investigation into Deirdre's disappearance has seen various phases, with Gardaí exploring multiple leads and theories. However, to this date, the answers that the Jacob family so desperately seek remain elusive. The importance of community support and public assistance in bringing forth new information cannot be overstressed, as even the smallest detail may hold the key to unlocking this mystery. The hope for a positive outcome remains steadfast, I'm sure, within the hearts of Deirdre's loved ones and those who have come to know her story. A positive outcome in this context would mean finding Deirdre, providing her family with the opportunity to give her a proper burial, and affording them the modicum of peace that comes with having closure. Equally, it involves identifying and bringing to justice the individual or individuals responsible for her disappearance, ensuring that no other family has to endure a similar ordeal. In remembering Deirdre, let us also renew our commitment to supporting those who continue to search for their missing loved ones. I sincerely hope that the Jacob family one day find the answers they seek. With the public's help, this could one day happen. So if you have any information, no matter how insignificant you think it is, please call the Serious Crime Review Team on 01-666-3444. Or you can call Newbridge Garda Station on 045-440180. Or alternatively, you can call the Garda Confidential Line on 1-800-666-111. So guys, that's it for today's episode of the Ireland Crimes and Mysteries podcast. Again, thanks for your listenership, and don't forget to subscribe to the show and hit that auto download so you never miss an episode. Until the next time, keep your eyes open and your mind curious. This podcast has been compiled from information gathered in the public sphere, like news articles, documentaries, and open source material that can be found on the web. Everything in this podcast is alleged unless a conviction has taken place.
You've been listening to Ireland Crimes and Mysteries. Join Newells for another episode coming real soon. And keep up to date by following our social media sites, our YouTube channel, and our website, islandcrimesandmysteries.ie.